Today's episode is about Jackie Robinson, and as the song says, take me out to the ball game. There was a time when the song did not apply to everyone. It is hard to imagine, but listen in as Mike McMillan reminds us of the effort by Jackie and many others. And remember to visit our website, faithucc.org, for 100 more episodes of inspiring messages from Faith UCC in Dunedin, Florida.
So this past month has been a delight for me as a sermon writer, as we have focused on Black history and the great Americans that have shaped this nation in such profound and amazing and wonderful ways. We have, so a little recap, we have journeyed into the life this month of Rosa Parks, and that defiant moment of not giving up her seat on a city bus, and how that act of protest was a major spark in igniting the civil rights movement. We journeyed into the life of Harriet Tubman and her bravery as a liberator of slaves as part of the Underground Railroad system of freedom, and how time and time again, all 5 feet of her would venture back into slave territory to help folks on their own way to freedom. An amazing woman. Now, last week, we entered into the life of Maya Angelou and her poetry that is some of the finest and richest ever written, as it speaks of freedom and liberation and love. In each of these cases, we examined strong and unyielding faith that they possessed in this ever-present nature of God that grounded these great visionaries and inspired them to be catalysts that literally changed the world around them. Their faiths were strong and rested upon a foundational trust that God was always with them, guiding them, giving them the courage to persevere through all that life threw at them, and journeyed constantly with them through all the trials that they faced. That's what they have in common. God brought inner peace, inner calm, and a sense that they were held in this strong power of love. So today is our final day in the sermon series, and we encounter yet another Black American that changed the world through a courage that was rooted firmly in his trust and experience of that same ever-present nature of that which we name God. And given that we are at the heart of the start of yet another baseball season, who's excited for that? Woo! And the Rays just played their first game on Friday, and then, funny, they lost to the Twins yesterday. Ouch, I know, that was biting. I thought, how fitting to journey into the life of one of the greatest baseball players of all time, who is less remembered for his baseball skills, though they were formidable, but often more remembered for the groundbreaking nature of his ever having taken a major league field at all in the first place to display those skills. Of course, I'm talking about the legendary number 42 of the Brooklyn Dodgers, Jackie Robinson, and how he was the baseball player that broke the color barrier in Major League Baseball. You may might have heard of that term, the color barrier. It was an unofficial gentleman's agreement that relegated all Black players, no matter how good they were, to what were called the Negro Leagues. Major League and minor league fields were for white players only. This was a firmly entrenched belief and practice and vociferously defended by white power. But all of that changed on April 15th, 1947, in front of 26,000 spectators, 14,000 of them Black spectators, at Ebbets Field in Brooklyn. Jackie Robinson ran onto the field as a first baseman and shattered that color barrier once and for all. I want to show you a little video I found. It might be a little washed up, but his voice will carry it.
During Major League Baseball's first several decades, names like Ruth, Cobb, and Gehrig turned the league into the heart of a national pastime. But in the segregationist America of the early 20th century, national was far more exclusive than it was inclusive. The big leagues were reserved for whites. An imaginary color line encircled every diamond in the majors, leaving Black ball players to play in so-called Negro leagues, where the money was scarce, but the talent was plentiful. Satchel Paige, Josh Gibson, and Roy Campanella were just a few of the stars who'd bring the Negro Leagues to prominence in the 1930s. But the color line dividing them from the major leagues was notoriously stubborn, and it would take a man like Branch Rickey to finally snap it in half. In the mid-1940s, Rickey, the general manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers, began making plans to recruit a player from the Negro Leagues, a decision that was met with plenty of raised eyebrows.
I think that being a very religious man, the way that he was, and knowing that the black ball players could not play in Major League Baseball and professional baseball, I just think he wanted to do something about it.
Rickey set his sights on Jackie Robinson, a shortstop with the Kansas City Monarchs, and in 1945 approached him with an offer. But that offer came with a condition, which resulted in a famous exchange between Rickey and Robinson, later portrayed in the 1950s, The Story of Jackie Robinson, with Robinson playing himself.
Suppose I collide with you at second base, and when I get up, I say, you dirty black so-and-so, what do?
Mr. Rickey, do you want a ball player who's afraid to fight back?
I want a ball player with guts enough not to fight back.
Robinson accepted the terms, and in 1946, suited up with the Dodgers farm team, the Montreal Royals.
This is truly an historic day here in Jersey City. A 27-year-old Negro named Jackie Robinson is playing his first game for the Montreal Royals, the Dodger Farm Club. Robinson steps to the plate. Here's the pitch. Swing away!
Robinson thrived in Montreal. He was named the league's most valuable player. And with just days to go before the start of the 1947 season, he was signed to his first major league contract, debuting for the Brooklyn Dodgers on April 15th, 1947.
It was a day when somehow people knew, thoughtful people, educated people, hey, it's not just whites playing a game on a diamond anymore. Forget the architecture so regaled by baseball writers. Suddenly, it was a new beginning.
The long-standing color line was finally broken. But being the first black major leaguer, Jackie quickly found himself the object of scorn, not only among fans, but among some of his own teammates as well. Many who petitioned against the very idea of Robinson wearing a big league uniform.
And I said, I don't know about any petition, but they tell me you got one up. And I don't know about any petition, but I'll tell you what you can do with it, because Robinson's going to play on this ball club. Because I don't look at the color, I don't care whether he's green, black, yellow, white. He has talent, and he will put money in your pocket and my pocket. This is some kind of player, and he's going to be here. And I'm warning you now that he's only the first of many to follow.
Jackie was some kind of player. He won Rookie of the Year in 1947 and went on to have a Hall of Fame career.
Jackie Robinson, runner at third base, takes his lead. And the Robinson's going to try to steal home. He is safe at home plate. Yogi Berra's going crazy. Berra thought he had him, but Jackie Robinson has stolen home.
But more important than his play on the field was the attitude, the defiance, the courage he displayed in a world that wanted nothing to do with him, simply because of the color of his skin. April 15th, 1947, wasn't just a turning point for Major League Baseball. It was a turning point for an entire country.
Wow, what a story, huh? And you had to light that guy's voice. How about that, huh? Boy, that was an announcer voice that guy had. So Jackie Robinson was a class act, wasn't he? In a tough time. Now, this was known by all who knew him. I came across a story. It might have been that scene that you saw where Jackie got tagged out. I came across a story from Mickey Mantle on a website called Hardball Times Baseball. And it tells a story when Mantle was facing Robinson in the 1952 World Series and how they were warned about Robinson's notorious base-running skills. and how on this particular occasion during the game, Mantle and another player, they faked Robinson out while he was rounding first base, and then ended up catching him between first and second, and like you saw up there, they got him out, which to someone like Robinson would be a pretty big shot to his ego, right? Absolutely. But Mantle tells a story. He says this, "I'll never forget the sight. Jackie getting up and dusting himself off and giving me a little tip of the cap, his eyes saying, 'I'll get you next time.'" And then Mantle goes on and says, "After the series, he," meaning Robinson, "came into our clubhouse and shook my hand and said, 'You're one hell of a ball player.' I thought, man, what a class guy. I never could have done that. Not in a million years. I'm a really bad loser." But not Robinson, though. Not Robinson. He was many things, but a bad loser he was not. He could not be. He could not be a sore loser. He did not have that luxury like Mickey Mantle did. Things were different for him as the first black player in Major League Baseball. Nor was he allowed, like that dust-kicking guy you just saw, nor was he allowed to show any anger on the field, though the times that he had to endure surely would have afforded him the right to be angry, to lash out at the vicious name-calling and the yelling that he endured in those first years with the Dodgers. He was threatened often. He had things thrown at him constantly while on the field, including balls from pitchers that threw at his head that did not think he should be on the field with him. He had every reason to get angry out there, but he knew he couldn't do it. The wonderful book called Jackie Robinson, A Spiritual Biography, I spent the whole week reading this. It was fascinating, by Michael Long and Chris Lamb. They sum it up well, and I want to share their words with you. They wrote, "Nobody in sports had more at stake, and no one ever suffered more than Robinson. Opposing pitchers threw at him. Opposing base runners spiked him. Fans screamed the vilest of racial epithets. He routinely received death threats. He was constantly under assault for daring to play a game deemed for whites only." They go on, writing that if Robinson failed, he affirmed the belief of many whites that blacks were inferior. If he lost his temper, he affirmed the belief of those who thought blacks did not have the temperament to play white baseball. It was not enough for him to be good enough for the major leagues. He had to be better than most of the other players. He had to beat them at their own game, and to do so with grace and dignity and equanimity. If Robinson succeeded, he succeeded for all blacks and millions of whites who believed in racial equality. His success would inspire millions of blacks that they too deserve to be treated with equality and fairness. It would cure many white Americans of their belief that blacks were inferior and convince many others that blacks should have the same opportunities as whites, not just in baseball, but also in jobs and housing and education." End quote. Think about that. White players just got to play baseball, right? And be sore losers and get angry and kick up dust and vent on and off the field, but not Jackie. He had the hopes and the dreams of so many on his shoulders. The responsibility must have felt at times like it was just too much to bear for him. Surely he wanted to snap. Surely he wanted the freedom to throw it back at folks a bit. Surely he wanted to exact some revenge on all the evil that was thrown his way. But he never did. He never did. He played with heart. He played with courage. He played with patience. And he played with the peace that only his firm trust in the God that was guiding him could give. You see, Jack Roosevelt Robinson was raised by a mother that lived and breathed the belief in a God of liberation and freedom and fullness of life for all people. His mother, her name was Mallie Robinson, to quote Long and Lamb again, lived an active faith that took cues directly from the biblical Jesus, who declared at the outset of his ministry that he had come to set the oppressed free. Unlike submissive Christians waiting for the pie in the sky, Mallie fervently believed that those who follow Jesus must act right here and now, that they must fight for the freedom and equality that God desires for everyone, even if doing so requires suffering along the way. In her view, the people of God will no doubt suffer as they confront oppression, but if they keep their eyes focused on God's will, they will see that suffering can be redemptive, it can redeem individual lives and establish freedom and equality. And finally, they write about her Malley's God was not the immortal and invisible God that white Christians sang about. Her God was not holy, other, transcendent, inaccessible, and unmovable. Malley's God was always close by, who traveled with her, next to her, even inside her. It's no wonder that Jackie grew to be the man he was and had the courage and the faith to change the game of baseball, the nation, and the world. He did so, like his mother, through a quiet and confident faith and a strong belief that through all the trials that he endured, his being was infused and intermingled with a presence that sustained him and gave him the courage to just keep on going, if even for just one more day. He modeled the nonviolent life and words of Jesus as he practiced nonviolence again and again by turning the other cheek in the wake of suffering through vicious attacks, as he was spat upon and hailed with spikes and had hard balls thrown at him and jeered and racially insulted. Think about that. He trusted that he was not walking his journey alone, but that he was accompanied by a God of liberation and freedom for all people. And through his actions on the field and off the field, he was participating in that liberating and freeing work of God. And his actions literally began to change things for the better for black folks living under all sorts of other color barriers. There were a lot of them. Keep in mind, when Robinson and his nonviolent, God-driven self ran out onto that diamond wearing that number 42 in 1947, we were still just short of a decade away from Rosa Parks. Rosa had not sat defiantly on that bus yet. That wasn't until 1955. And we were still almost two decades from King's Selma March in 1965. He was a pioneer. That just kind of puts things in perspective as to how dangerous and risky Robinson's life and actions were in that time. But he never flinched at the risk. With God as a part of him, with a presence of a courage that transcends normal human bounds guiding him, and with his mom Mally's vision of this liberating and God coaxing us ever forward to equality and justice, he began to break the bonds of oppression without ever resorting to violence. And he did it all through an intense love of playing a game. That's a pretty incredible story, isn't it? It's a story of determination, sacrifice, overcoming suffering, and the importance of nonviolence in all that we do in our lives. It's my hope, friends, that through this month, through these stories of ordinary people doing extraordinary things, often at great risk to themselves, that we too can trust and sense the same animating, mysterious, and holy presence that sustained their courage, that we can trust that is also a part of us as well. They serve to remind us that we have within us a presence, a spirit that animates us with the same kind of courage and calls us on the same kind of paths in our own time as nonviolent liberators and peaceful dreamers. Some used bus seats. Others used underground railroads. Some used poetry. And one man used America's great pastime to change the world. The question I want you to take with you is, what will you use to change the world? What will you use to change the world? What will you use to keep alive the love of God and be the liberating and freeing hands and feet of God in the world, just like they did? We all have it inside of us. Every single one of you has it inside of you, like Rosa, like Harriet, like Maya and Jackie. We just need to trust that it's there. So I leave you with that question on as we conclude this Black History Month. What will you do? What will you do? And what will you use to change the world? Amen.